am your keeper of time, Alex K. I'm in this moment with you, and I want to acknowledge the conditions of both the pandemic and the subject matter of today's discussions. Both can generate big feelings for many of us. And in the interest of open and creative futuring, let us be mindful of what's going on for all of us in our lives beyond this assembly and be caring with one another throughout the proceedings. This is a moment when we urgently need to imagine new futures, to revisit our histories and to adjust to our present tenses. Our times are tumultuous, upsetting, and disconcerting. It's why we are all here. Amidst it all, the steady work of making meanings, challenging meanings, contesting meanings needs to continue. This is the work of all of us, especially artists who are so often pushed aside. But today we resist that push and we stake a claim for art. My earrings tell us that this assembly takes place across time. My right earring says 2020, and my left earring says 2029. That puts us amidst contested versions of past, present, and future stories. This is how it's always been, and today we will amplify this truth. We don't seek to create a single story. We seek instead to write multiple stories with multiple voices. We need to be messy, respectfully messy. It's a difficult task, but it's possible with a leap of imagination that we'll take together. So today, wherever we are across this continent, and perhaps it's beyond its mythical borders, we assemble. In the futures, we aspire to a time when an acknowledgement of country is not necessary, when awareness of country and its people is so embedded in our languages, knowledges, and ways of being and seeing that it does not need saying. We are, however, not there yet, and so we recognise that we are all on unceded land. We pay our deep respects to the wisdom, leadership, and storytelling of First Nations people. I acknowledge the Jawa people of the Jaja Warung lands where I join you from. And in the spirit of 2029, we're paying rent to local organisation Naldaran. Wukan Delkek, Jaja Warung Jai, Ba Mati Guli Ba Duroyi. I give my respect to Jaja Warung country and their ancestors. Today, collectively, we are sharing over 240 hours of time. That's a lot of time and a lot of precious energy and focus. So we thank you deeply for being here, and we invite you to bring your whole self to open up to new thinking and new possibilities. Before we welcome our first speaker, Alice Wong, from the year 2029, I invite you to gather yourself, to settle your presence, and to ground yourself. We'll take a moment collectively, but do whatever feels right for you. You can close your eyes, take a breath, press your fingers to your temples, let your shoulders relax, and let your hearts and minds open. Let go of old stories and get ready to practice new ones. Let's take 3 deep breaths together. Welcome. We are in 2029, and I'd like to welcome our first speaker, Alice Wong. Alice Wong is the president of the North American chapter of the Disabled Oracle Society. Originally founded in 2020, there are chapters of the Disabled Oracle Society in 50 countries with over 5,000 members. Alice lives in San Francisco on Turtle Island with 6 cats, Mittens, Patches, Blueberry, Mocky, Chester, and Oreo. Alice, you have 20 minutes and I'll keep time as is my responsibility. When you have 30 seconds of 2029 time left, I'll make this sound.
Welcome everyone. It's 4:50 Pacific time in California. Dan, I'd like to call to order to the December meeting of the Disabled Toronto Society, the North American Chapter. Screen share off, please. So to describe myself, I am an Asian American woman to wearing a black jacket with white stripes. I have a mask over my nose attached to a tube for my ventilator. While people are joining both online and in person, please help yourselves to some snacks and drinks in the back. Louise brought some Tim Tams back from a visit to Melbourne attending the Australia Chapter's annual meeting last month. Please remember, we have people participating online, on the phone, and through an all-new platform, Beep Boop Beep. Be sure to follow the various streams from your device throughout our meeting today. Since it's December, we're about to embark on another decade in the 21st century. Let's take some time to review the major issues and challenges we face as disabled Oracles. Established in December 2020, these 9 years have been difficult with the coronavirus, the phage in 2024, and the increasing changes of weather patterns and global migration in the last 5 years. All of these crises have disproportionately impacted marginalized people, especially communities of color and Indigenous, poor, older, and disabled people. The planet is literally more hostile to people like us. And yet the greatest existential threat we face is from other humans who believe congenital disabilities are something to be fixed and eliminated through gene therapy and human gene editing, also known as HGE. Screen share, please. Eugenics has always been with us, but in the next 10 to 15 years, we know HGE will be widely available to the public. Since the press conference this past August by McEdit, a multinational corporation planning to provide high-end boutique services for people who want to give their future generations the best chance at life. They didn't announce the date of their launch, but reports say it's likely to take place 2030 or 2031 at the very latest. The fact that there was such fanfare and little opposition to McEdit means we have a lot of work ahead of us as disabled Oracles. Screen share off. What does the advent of McEdit mean for us? How do we, imperfectly perfect creatures, argue against these seductive narratives about being better, stronger, healthier? How do we address the very real ethical implications behind this technology? Before we have a discussion of what to do next, let's go back and review some basics. This may be useful for some of our newer members. Screen share, please. Many years ago, the Center for Genetics and Society described human genetic modification as, quote, the direct manipulation of the genome using molecular engineering techniques, end quote. This is often referred to as human gene editing, or HGE. This slide. There are two types of modification, somatic and germline. We are focused on germline modification because it would change the genes in eggs, sperm, or early embryos. This means subsequent generations would also carry those changes. Switch her off. CRISPR-Cas9 is one gene editing tool that became popular because it's fast, cheap, and accurate. CRISPR was used in 2018 by He Jiaokui, a researcher who announced at an international conference that he produced genetically edited babies in an attempt to make them resistant to HIV. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison for illegal medical practices in 2019. At that time, germline modification was a red flag for ethical reasons, but it wasn't banned or regulated in every country. Over the years, tools such as CRISPR became more sophisticated and slowly opposition to the unknown consequences died down. Excitement around this science and possibilities of eliminating disease outweighed in questions about the underlying assumptions about health, disability, and difference. The idea of giving babies an advantage, whether it's less likelihood of developing a disease or enhancing other traits, was irresistible to people with the needs to give their kids, quote unquote, the best. The best meaning a life without a disability. And this is why Big Edits and its subsequent competitors are on the horizon for commercial and undoubtedly militaristic purposes. The Disabled Oracle Society began in 2020 in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, with sick and disabled people sounding the alarm about the importance of wearing masks, the value of accessibility, and the interdependence of all communities. It became very clear who was considered disposable and who was not, as institutions and governments developed medical triage guidelines. The casual ableism, racism, and ageism went unchecked in debates around restarting the economy with terms such as acceptable losses and high risk, as if those lives weren't living or saving. Screen share, please. Now, I know Twitter doesn't exist anymore, but here's an antique tweet from March 18, 2020, to where I said disabled people are modern day oracles, in response to a tweet by Emily Johnson, who wrote, quote, "We need to talk about how U.S. states have legalized murdering disabled and chronically ill people by taking them off critical equipment they already had or denying care should they be moved outside their home or facility care situations, and how providers justify this." Next slide. The actual catalyst to the formation of the Disabled Oratory Society came from an article in July of that year from the New York Times as part of a series of stories marking the 30th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, a civil rights law for disabled people. An article by J.D. Hafner titled, "Was Science Fiction, Gene Editing is Now a Living Reality," featured several parents of disabled children, scientists, and bioethicists, and only one person with a disability. Next slide. My friend and fellow oracle, Rebecca Trofley, tweeted, quote, "In New York Times, how dare you have a writer who doesn't identify as disabled to write about what CRISPR means for our community as part of your 8830 spread. Your ableism really knows no bounds." Screen share off. When I saw that, something inside me snapped. Here we are, disabled oracles since the beginning of time, to warning society and telling our truths, and being completely sidelined once again. This is nothing new or unique. Throughout history, marginalized, troublesome, or undesirable people were not believed or taken seriously. We elicit discomfort and disrupt people's binary ideas of normalcy. Our warnings have been silenced in order to uphold the status quo. Even when we make persuasive arguments, we are not at the center, despite our extensive scholarship and wisdom. For instance, I interviewed Dr. Jaipreet Verdi in August 2020 about her book, Hearing Happiness, Deafness, Years in History. And she said this about the future of cures, such as human gene editing. Screen share, please. Quote, "There is no guarantee that genetic engineering will eradicate hereditary deafness, nor any certainty that it will not cause any further complications. Moreover, this is essentially at the core a form of cultural genocide." Next slide. "To argue that this needs to be avoided at the level of genetics is an affront to generations of deaf people who do not perceive themselves as genetic defects." Screen share off. That was a brief overview of our origins. And I share this because the message remains constant. We tell our stories and truths in our own words. We define who we are and our place in the world. We fight to be seen and heard. We live in defiance with joy and radical acceptance. You voted me as the president of the Disabled Oratory Society this year, and I take this responsibility seriously. Friends, I too am tired of defending my worth every day to people obsessed with having everything faster, shinier, newer. We try to reach people where they are, engaging in a number of creative ways. We assert the danger and uncertainty to future generations with altered genomes and how it will impact the entire human race. We repeat our big talking points all the time, that all people have worth, that no person should be left behind, and that technology is never neutral. We also try to point out how technology reinforces white supremacy, ableism, and all forms of structural inequality. This is not due with too many tragic examples to list. What can we do? How do we love and hold each other up so we can keep going on as a community? How do we harness our imagination to create a world we want to live in right now and in the future? At this time, I'd like to open it up for discussion and questions. Let me see here. I'm Emily from New York City. What is the role of a disabled oracle? Well, thanks, Emily. It's totally up to you. What are you comfortable talking about? Just living your best life is a form of resistance. As I mentioned earlier, I don't have the answers or even a strategy yet on how to engage with the candidates and the millions who have become their customers. But I'm good at asking questions. I'm good at telling my personal story within a larger political context. In asking questions, I want people to consider other perspectives and why germline human gene editing is incredibly troubling and problematic for so many communities, not just disabled people. Since we're almost out of time, here's one final question. Hi, I'm Grace from Tempe, Arizona. A long time disabled oracle. I'm scared. What is the point of doing all of this if we're going to become a state? Thanks, Grace. I'm really scared too. Things feel overwhelming and impossible every day. Just know that you have a choice on how much you want to do. I believe everyone has the capacity to change the world while we are still alive, in big and small ways. Raise your please. I am reminded of this tweet from 2017 by Dr. Ruha Benjamin, a sociologist and author of Race After Technology, Abolitionist Tools for the New Jim Code. Quote, remember to imagine and craft the world you cannot live without, just as you dismantle the ones you cannot live within. Stop share screen. As disabled oracles, we continue to build and create on the knowledge and dreams of our ancestors. They left their mark on the planet death will be. After we've all gone, we will show up in other ways. Someone will see and discover us, and we'll be speaking with them from the past. I don't know if this helps, but think about the ancestors that mean something to you. Connect with the people close to you right now and the stories passed down by your elders. Know that we are in this together collectively and that our brilliance as oracles will not be denied. I call upon the power and wisdom of my disabled ancestors, such as Stella Young, Carrie Ann Lucas, Kaite Davidson, Ingwald Ward, Harriet McBride Johnson, and Stacey Park Gilbert. I have my memories and their words to guide me. And I hope this bit of advice brings you comfort, because we should embrace every single moment while we can. In closing, let's read the motto of the Disabled Oracle Society. We are the past. We are the present. We are the future. We are forever. See you all in 2030. Media adjourned.
Thank you so much, Alice. It's been an incredible 9 years, and I really appreciate you allowing us to join the gallery of this meeting of the Disabled Oracle Society. I know that there's many here today who will go on to become founding members of other chapters. So thank you for your inspiration from 2029. And now we're going to turn to our two respondents. Like us, they've only now heard Alice's address from 2029 for the first time. Our first respondent is Dr. A.M. Kangisa. Dr. Kangisa is a writer, geographer, and sound artist, author of several books and seminal artworks, sound works. Anya, we're delighted to have you here. I've learned so much from you about the politics of listening, and I'm very grateful that today we have the chance to listen to your reflections. You have 7 minutes. I'll keep the time, as is my responsibility. And when you have 30 seconds left, you'll hear this sound. But before we begin, could you let us know which time you're responding from? Are you in 2020 or 2029?
I am responding from 2029.
Brilliant. Thank you, Anya.
Thank you so much, Alex. And thank you so much to Alice Wong, a brilliant president of the Disabled Oracle Society, and someone with such wise words that truly resonate. I wanted to pick up a little bit, Alice, on something that you were saying when you were talking about the human gene editing and what gets left behind when things get cut out. And the thing that I wanted to talk about and the thing that I was thinking about was what gets cut out is the ability to wait. As disabled people, what we know is how to wait. We know how to sit, we know how to watch, we know how to listen, we know how to take our time. We know the value of time. And one of the things that we really learned during the last 10 years, I mean, we've always known it anyway, so the last 10 years wasn't all that much different in that sense, was that white supremacist societies, colonial ways of thinking, were about the speeding up of time. And it didn't like the time that we lived in. It didn't like the fact that we took longer, that we saw time differently. When you were talking, one of the things that I was thinking about was my great aunt, who couldn't use her hands. She had such gnarled arthritic hands that she could barely hold anything. But what she used to do a lot is she used to work with plants. And my great aunt had the most beautiful home full of orchids, plants that are notoriously difficult to tend to, plants that have all sorts of different ways of living and dying. And my great aunt every day spent all day with her hands in that soil, tending to those orchids, speaking to those orchids, taking the time that the orchids required her to take. And there was an understanding, I think, that she had that all disabled people have, particularly disabled people that are further minoritized, Black disabled people, Indigenous disabled people, poor disabled people, that you have to wait until the time is there for you to be allowed to be open about who you are, live the life that you live. And my great aunt, she spent her time talking to her plants. She spent her time understanding what it means to be interdependent with the world. She spent her time listening to the clouds. She spent her time watching the grass. She spent her time with the people that she loved. And when you were talking about the human genome editing, that's what I was really thinking about, what they took away from us, what they tried to take away from us. The knowledges that we have about how to live with others and how to live within the world and to take care of each other and to take care of the world, because that's what we have. Those are the kinds of skills and knowledges and sensitivities that we have, because we know that things travel differently. We can't afford to place our bodies into the timelines that capitalism enforces on us. We can't afford to try to force ourselves into that. And those timelines never care about us in the first place. And by trying to edit out our sensitivities towards different ways of being, towards slownesses, towards being careful around things, it was one of the things that they really, really tried to stop. I was thinking also that in taking our time, in living along these different times, what we really cultivated was attunement, paying attention in ways that other people didn't place much value in or maybe didn't even notice, paying attention in ways that a lot of people wouldn't even think about or care about, paying attention to small things and gestures and moments of love and joy, like you spoke about as well. Kindnesses that came through messages, that came through touch, that came through a phone call, that came through us holding each other in mind and holding each other with love and thinking of each other across countries and oceans and continents. Those kinds of attunements is what they wanted to get rid of as well. They wanted to break our bonds to each other. They wanted to break our care for each other. And they wanted to break the ways that we love each other, the ways that we see each other, and the ways that we turn towards each other. Because we spent so much time turning away and being turned away, that those moments where we refused to do that, where we built our own worlds, where we built our own loves, where we built our own desires, they couldn't have that. And they didn't want us to have that. And so they tried to get rid of everything that kept us alive and joyful and connected to one another. They tried to get rid of our oracle sensibilities. They tried to get rid of the ways that we felt other worlds and other things and other beings and other spirits and each other. I don't know how well it's going to work, though, them trying to get rid of that. I don't know how much they think that they can splice and cut and weed out and break apart, because I think it still remains I think that we always remain across all those timelines that you mentioned. And I think that nothing can really be done to eradicate that or to erase that. Because Alice, as you said, we have always been and we always will be. And there are so many of us that we can never all be found. There are so many of us living in so many different kinds of ways and talking to each other and sharing our stories and remembering each other's hands in flowers and all of your cats and all of the other things that keep us here and keep us together. The candles that we burn, the altars that we make, the books that we send each other and read to each other, the poetry that we write, the songs and sounds that we create. I think that will always live on across those timelines, Alice. So I thank you so much. I thank you so much for being here and for being you and everything that you bring. Thanks.
Thanks, Anya. I'm going to carry that notion of attunement with me. And now I'd like to round out our triangulation of ideas by inviting Kela Sherwood O'Regan to join us on stage. Kela is an Indigenous multidisciplinary storyteller and activist based in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And Kela, we're humbled to have you with us today to share your insights. You also have 7 minutes, and I'll take time as my responsibility. And when you have 30 seconds left, I will use this, although I probably won't because it's too hard to ever stop anyone, but this will be the sound. Thank you, Kela.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko kira shuta rigan a hou. E kōrero ana a hou no Awarua, Te Waipounamu, ki te whenua o tōku iwi, o ōku tūpuna, te iwi kaitahu. So, kia ora everybody. I'm Keta. I am calling from the present, or since I'm in Awarua in Bluff on the whenua of on the land of my ancestors at the very, very bottom of the South Island of Aotearoa. I guess I'm technically calling from a little bit in the future to those of you who are based in Te Whenua Moimoia in Australia. Wow is all I can start with. I think hearing Alice's kōrero and Anya's response has given me a lot of emotions, thinking about a lot of things. And I think the main thing that it calls to mind for me is the importance of whakapapa. So in our Māori culture, we talk a lot about whakapapa, which is around our genealogy. So it's the connection that I have to my parents, my grandparents, my ancestors. And I think it's probably quite fitting that I'm calling here from Bluff, a place that I don't get to spend a lot of time. But I'm looking out over here to the ocean and to some of the islands and things that my ancestors would have, known very well, like the back of their hands. And I think Alice's kōrero or Alice's discussion has brought up similar for me. Thinking about whakapapa, so our genealogy, both ancestrally, but literally embodied in those genes. And then also being excited and thinking about, wow, what a future if we have Alice Wong, the president of this Disabled Oracle Society. That sounds like a club that I want to join. But I guess I wanted to touch on one thing in particular, that hearing about gene editing as an Indigenous disabled woman makes me think a lot about discussions that I've also had with my whānau, my family, and my sisters, my beautiful wahine toa friends, who I am so influenced by and so in such a positive way and learn so much from. And one of my friends is actually doing her PhD looking at the connections around what does it mean to be looking at DNA and the sovereignty of that data as Indigenous people. Because we know that within our communities, genetic information is very, very sacred. As the literal embodiment of our whakapapa, of our tūpuna, of our ancestors, we have a lot of cultural practices in te ao Māori, in our Māori culture, that teach us to look after that information. And learning about our ancestry is a sacred practice. It's a sacred practice to go and look at our whakapapa written down and to hear the stories of our ancestors. And also when we think about the things that contain our DNA, including our blood, our hair, our fingernails, we have many cultural practices around preserving those and taking care of those parts of our body that are now, you know, coming off our body. And so for our people, we think a lot about whakapapa when we think about gene editing. And I think a lot around our sovereignty over that data, because we know that as Indigenous peoples, as well as disabled people, very often that sort of information is used to uphold a system that doesn't care about us, and that will use that information to further widen the inequities that our people face. And in particular, something that really concerns me is seeing how this information is then, it then drives the sort of actions that happen, right? Like it's political, you know, even, you know, having the science doesn't exist in a vacuum, but it is political because it drives what happens to our people. And very often what it seems to drive is focusing on this end result. Oh, well, we can come up with cures for this, or we can, you know, we found out that all of these Māori have these genes for, you know, maybe they're just predisposed to diabetes, maybe they're just predisposed to X, Y, and Z. And so it really harms us on both sides. It harms us on the side of those of us who are tangata whaikaha, disabled Indigenous people. It harms us. And it also harms our wider whānau as well, because rather than thinking about what are the underlying structures that give cause to the inequities that our people face and the massive health inequities that we have in this country and around the world for our other Indigenous relatives, rather than going back and thinking around how colonization has impacted our health and our well-being, our society wants to focus on these interventions, which, as we know, you know, are causing so much harm. It also makes me think about eugenics, which is also sadly something that's very front of mind in Aotearoa at the moment, with the end of life care bill referendum in 2020, at the end of 2020, which we're absolutely not as a society ready for, in my view, to have that discussion. And it just makes me think how consistently these solutions are put forward, and the solutions that they're actually looking for are not solutions to problems that our communities are really worried about, but the solution is a solution to our existence, because our existence is always seen as a problem of some kind. But onto the hopeful side of things, hearing Alice in this future makes me so excited. It makes me excited because I think, gosh, I must have been friends with Alice Wong for a good old decade by then. And that's something that brings a huge amount of joy to me. It makes me excited because having people like Alice working in these spaces and redefining our identities as oracles, I think will make such massive. And it also talks about the importance of recognising the link that we are in our whakapapa and in these genealogies, whether that's ancestral in a biological sense or ancestral in a cultural sense. You know, we are all going to be ancestors, and we all are living ancestors today. And it makes me think about the importance of those who are coming up, growing up underneath, or, you know, emerging from the soil and from these communities. And it makes me think about all of the disabled young people who are growing up and who are going to be looking at people like Alice and Anya and many of the fantastic disabled oracles that are now so front of mind with social media. And it makes me profoundly excited to think about the role we can have in supporting them in their identities and their understanding of disability. And I just know that in a couple of months' time, that in the next session of that Disabled Oracles Society meeting or the next annual meeting, I just know that there are going to be a bunch of feisty young ones ready to tackle McEdit and to stage whatever kind of protest might be needed, and that gives me so much joy. Nō reira, kia ora koutou, ngā mihi nui kia koutou, kia ora.
Thanks so much, Kella. Now I would like to invite President Wong back. Just to close out this section of the assembly, Alice, I wanted to see if you have any last perspectives on these thoughts from the past and the future.
Well, I just want to thank the two respondents. You know, that's not an easy thing to do, to listen, to do a talk, and then have to kind of extemporaneously respond to it. You both gave such thoughtful and, you know, very personal responses, and I'm very touched by it, and, you know, I feel like this is where us as disabled people together, either in virtual or virtual or in-person spaces, there's, you know, an alchemy that happens when we connect and when we share these spaces, and I feel like that's, to me, the most hopeful thing about the future, that, you know, we will kind of exist forever in whatever form, whether it's non-corporeal or just, you know, our, through the mushrooms and grass that comes out of the earth, and also through our stories and words and art. But yeah, I'm just very grateful to be, to have this opportunity here with, you know, this organization, to be invited and just to be in a tribute with you all.
Thank you, Alice.
Imagining Disability Justice, a 12-hour special broadcast for International Day of People with Disability. I'm Pauline Vatuna. Thank you for listening. The 3CR Disability Day 2020 broadcast is proudly supported by the City of Yarra through an Investing in Community grant.